Hi, welcome to BCI Cattle Chat. I'm Brad White, joined today by Bob Weber, Dustin Pendell, and Bob Larson. Good morning, guys.
Hey, good morning, Brad.
Morning.
Happy to be here in early October. It's that time of year where we're thinking about all kinds of things, including weaning calves. And one of the things that we'll talk about today is what to look for in those calves to make sure if they're getting sick or if they're getting ill. How would you evaluate them, and what do we want to watch in those calves? We've also got a couple great listener questions. One's about anaplasmosis, and we've talked about that a little bit before, but this question is specifically on, hey, it's new to my herd. Why is this happening? What do I do? And then we've got a question related to tracking cows as they go through the pasture. So as always, we really enjoy getting those listener questions. If you have comments or things you'd like us to talk about, send us an email at bci@ksu.edu. Before we jump into those topics, great conference yesterday, Bob. I know you were able to listen to part.
Yeah, so yesterday, the 1st of October, was the virtual rendition of the KSU Beef Stocker Field Day. Again, a virtual event, so it was hosted on Zoom webinar. And so Glenn Tonzer and ag economist that works closely with Dr. Pendle here, as well as Dale Blasey and Justin Wagner, all had great talks. Those will be recorded. I suspect if you go to the typical location, ksubeef.org, you'll find the link for that event's recorded sessions, and encourage everybody to go check those out. So there's some great stuff on limit feeding, and of course Tonzer's famous market updates. So,
and just to follow up, if you go to agmanager.info, Glenn and a graduate student of his that worked on this project on a limit feeding, there's a number of budget tools that are posted there. So if you want to look at budgeting some of that limit feeding, whether you're marking on the grid versus live cattle, there's also some fact sheets and whatnot there. So agmanager.info has some of that decision tool information.
Yeah, cool.
Excellent. And I think that's always a good thing to at this time of year. It's sometimes we get frustrated that things are so different, but it's kind of nice with these virtual conferences because it makes them pretty easy to catch up on, right? You can find some of those things online. You can go back and listen to some of the talks. I wanted to jump in, and we had a great question here, and I'll paraphrase a little bit, but the question is related to anaplasmosis. So anaplasmosis was new to this area, and the listener said, hey, we haven't had a lot of this before, but this year we're seeing people, and we're seeing deaths in adult cows, maybe a few cows that have aborted, never had an issue with anaplasmosis before. Why is it different now? And Bob, I'll let you jump in and tell us, why would that be different in an area now?
Well, and that is a frustration for a producer that's never had anaplasmosis before, because this is a disease that comes in and hits you hardest when it first enters the herd. So the first couple of years, if you've never had anaplasmosis before, you're going to have the highest death losses, the highest losses during those first couple of years. And it can be really devastating. It can be quite frustrating. The good thing is that you don't maintain that level of loss. The cows develop some immunity and some resiliency. The herd does. And so those levels of loss decline over the years. But while you're in it, that's not really helpful to know that it's not going to stay this bad. And so there's two parts of that. In an area where you haven't had anaplasmosis, the cows have no kind of internal protection, no immunity. And so the first year it shows up, a lot of cows are very susceptible. And so you can see some deaths, you can see some abortions. But over time, the cows and the herd develop some immunity. And so the losses decline over time.
Why would it be different this year? If we haven't ever had it before, how did it get here, and why wasn't it here before?
Well, anaplasmosis, where it hangs out is in the tick population primarily, and the cattle population. So those two are the reservoir, or where the organism hangs out. And so there are parts of the country where the ticks either don't exist or the ticks aren't infected with this disease. And so, but that's a moving line. Areas where the ticks become infected because infected cattle move into the air. So the kind of the using a battle analogy, the front moves. The interface where this disease is present is gradually moving. When I was much younger, this was a disease primarily of the Southeast United States, as well as kind of the Northwest United States. But what we've seen is that that line of where the disease is present has moved north and west, at least through Kansas, and entered some areas that really didn't have this disease before.
Yep, and this question came from Northeast Kansas, and so they hadn't had a lot of it before, and now they're seeing more of it, which you and I have heard reports of that over the last several years. So that tick population moves, and I think you make a good point, as it comes into the herd, it may be worse this year than it's been in the past. Why are we, if it's from ticks, ticks aren't as prevalent now as they were 2 to 3 months ago. Why are we seeing cases in late September, early October?
Well, this is actually, if the cows would be kind enough to just read the textbook, this is exactly when you would expect to see the peak number of cases, is a couple of months after peak tick season, because of the life cycle of the tick and the life cycle of the anaplasmosis organism, which lives on the red blood cells. And so that causes those red blood cells to be destroyed. And then what the cows really die of is lack of oxygen. They don't have enough red blood cells, so severe anemia. And that's really the health issue that occurs. That peak number of red blood cells that are infected, that's a couple months after the peak tick infection. So this fall time period is when we see the highest number of cases. Now, you can see cases of anaplasmosis really almost any time during the year, but this would be the classic peak number of cases.
I'm just curious, if I'm a producer and all of a sudden it's starting to come in, is there a way to treat this now after or prevent this?
There are a couple of treatments. There are antibiotics that we can use, some tetracyclines as well as some other antibiotics that are labeled or used to control anaplasmosis in those animals that are sick or those herds that are experiencing some problems. The plus and minuses of that is if you think about what I just said, so this is a disease that lives in ticks. And so if I treat cows right now and kind of solve this problem that they're experiencing now, well, the disease is still present in the environment, in the population. And so they can be exposed again, or different cattle can be exposed that weren't, 3 weeks ago. Now another set of cattle are exposed. And so we do recommend that if you see cattle that are showing signs of illness, so again, anemia, think low red blood cells, so they don't have good energy, they're depressed, just a lot of issues with this disease. Unthrifty, that's a good way of saying it. So we do have some treatments. There is also historically in herds that have fought this disease year after year, is we can feed tetracycline either in feed or in a mineral mix to try to get kind of blood levels of tetracycline that will control it. And that is certainly, I would call it helpful. It's good to have that tool in our toolbox, but it's not perfect because not all cattle consume the mineral equally well. And we do worry about some resistance issues in some strains of anaplasma organisms to the tetracycline that they've been exposed to in the past. So it's not the perfect tool. Dustin, we have treatment with an injectable for severe cases. We can feed tetracyclines if we know this is a problem in the area. There's some experimental vaccines that are used and they're relatively expensive as well, with kind of unknown effectiveness. So it is a frustrating disease. It's one where both as a veterinarian and a producer, it's just frustrating because the losses can be high, particularly early. And the control mechanisms all have a cost associated both with labor and product.
Yep. And so to hear more on that part, I would refer you back to episode 87. So we could go in the Wayback Machine. It was in December of last year. We had Dr. Hans Katzia on, who is an expert in anaplasmosis control. And he did a segment that was really good on anaplasmosis control. And we'll put a link to that old episode, or not old, but from last year in the show notes so that you can go back and look through some of those control details. So kind of what you're saying, Bob, it is new to some areas. That's not surprising. When it comes in, it can be more severe. If you hear about it in your area, keep a close watch on it. Work with your veterinarian, your extension specialist, come up with a plan how you're going to manage this in your herd, because you have a lot of options here from different types of control to different types of testing. So I think that's one of the things we're thinking about in the fall is anaplasmosis this time of year. The other thing, Bob, you mentioned you guys have just weaned some calves, right? And so we're thinking about those. How are your calves doing now that you've weaned them?
Yeah, so we're in process, both at the purebred unit and home. So when this airs, we'll likely be done weaning, but not through weaning, if that makes sense. And,
it does. There's always anybody fallout, that's done right? It, yeah.
So, and this year, one of the things, at least on the early weaned groups at the purebred unit, is, you know, this year, particularly late in the season, kind of a real challenging pink eye year. And part of that, you know, we got grass grew really good, and so we've got probably some eye irritation going on. Pretty good fly load this year. You know, we kind of had a lull in the summer with fly count, but September in particular, face flies counts really gone up, and so some lingering pink eye issues as those calves come in, and of course a little bit of the typical respiratory. You know, we've had kind of consistent weather here recently, but certainly a week or so ago some ups and downs and a little precipitation, so and in some cases some kind of dry dusty lots as well, so kind of the typical stuff, but just kind of working through getting calves straightened out and cleaned up and on feed. So,
absolutely. And I think one of the things to think about, well, two things based on what you said. One, and I want to ask Larson what to do with some of those pink eye cases as they're coming off. But two, I think have maybe a longer conversation on what do we watch for in these newly weaned calves to see if they're sick or not. So first, Bob, I'm going to ask you, what should Bob do with those pink eye cases?
Yeah, one of the things that we think we know about pink eye is our antibiotic treatments, the injectable antibiotics, work best really early in the disease. So when those calves kind of have a weepy eye, but you're not seeing the cloudiness, the scarring in the eye. We also think that if you get later in the disease, if what you're calling kind of a lingering problem is, it's been going on for days or a couple of weeks, and there's some cloudiness, at that point, the antibiotics probably aren't going to do much good. It might make me feel better that I'm doing something for the calf, but they're really going to be most effective really early. And once you've got some of that clap, that basically the eye is responding, the animal is responding, the antibiotics are going to be less impactful at that point.
So probably you'd have to evaluate, see the stage, and determine whether or not it makes sense to treat. So let me follow up on the second question, and both Bobs, I'll ask you guys this. Say I've newly weaned calves. What should I be watching for signs of sickness?
Yep. So one of the things that I like to do is be present when cattle are fed, just to observe, if I'm the guy in charge of, if I'm the guy in charge of monitoring health, you learn a lot about who shows up to the feed bunk and who doesn't, and the order that they do that. So, observing just behavior of the calves, if they've been in the yard for a few days and it takes them a minute to show up at the bunk and they're not acting like they're super excited to go eat some feed, particularly if you're just, doing some supplementation and maybe have a hay feeder, observing the order that they show up can be really, really helpful. So,
yeah, one of the challenges, though, with these newly weaned calves is sometimes they don't eat particularly well, and it's not that they're sick, it's just they're not used to this feed. And so it really takes some skill to really observe these calves. And, there's two things there. One is I want to observe their behavior. I want to observe their appetite. I'm also going to observe their manure. Some of the things that we're concerned about are coccidiosis can cause a little bit of blood in the manure. If they're overeating, they may get a little acidosis, or, looking at the calf their behavior, the manure. And, you know, one of the things that I find is that some people are just, and I wish I could teach it better, but the animal husbandry skills, the ability to really observe cattle and kind of be in tune to when, because each calf is a little bit different, a little more aggressive to the feed or not, and kind of telling the difference between sickness and other, you know, attributes of the calf, you know, just how aggressive they are, whether they, we used to say you have to be careful that you don't treat cattle that are ugly. So they are a different color. They don't look like the other calves. And that's one where, gosh, my good animal husbandry, high skilled people, they're worth their weight in gold. I wish I could make more of them.
But it's not just skill. It's time spent doing that. Because it's very easy to, and most people, when you have weaned calves, the only you have more things on your agenda that day than just feeding the calves. Often we're overbooked, we're busy, I'm going to do this. So I go throw two buckets of feed out, they walk up to the bunk, or they start to walk up to the bunk, and you I'm off. I'm going to do something else. And it doesn't matter how skilled you are, if you're looking the other direction, you're not going to find calves, especially in the early stages, which is when we really want to find them.
Now, are you speaking for the time early on,
yeah, right? Because it could be more expensive later on.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because if you treat them, good point, Dustin, because if you treat them early in the process, hopefully better outcome and less detriment to the animal. So, Bob, I will contend, yes, it takes skill. You got to know what you're looking for, but you also have to spend the time. I want to follow up on your manure point, because you made a manure point earlier, and you said you got to look at the feces. What am I looking for?
Yeah, it's to me. There's a couple of big things. I am looking for flecks of blood, so red blood, because that could be signs of a disease called coccidiosis. I'm looking for the consistency, and that, you know, really dry, really hard feces would indicate, well, they're not drinking water, they're not eating well. Really runny feces would be maybe they're overeating, and we've got a little acidosis. We maybe need to look at that calf or the diet, those types of things. So you're really kind of looking for, and again, it's whether it's time or skill, know what normal feces look like, and look for anything that doesn't look normal.
Yep, absolutely. What about, and Bob, I know you like to observe at feeding time. Tell me what you're looking for there.
Yeah, so this is true at home, and certainly what we try and instill in some of the students working at Purebred is, you know, for the calves that, you know, come right up to feed, you know, don't ignore them too, because they can be sick and still eat, right? So, you know, animals that have, particularly if we're thinking about pink eye, you know, runny or cloudy eyes, discharge that way. In terms of respiratory, you know, snotty noses, depressed behavior, you know, head down, ears down, so they got a fever, not feeling good. If they're really sick, you can hear them breathing, so they got some pneumonia going. So just, you know, kind of all the classic signs of BRDs. You know, calves that are laying down and don't appear interested in getting up to come up, even when the rest of the cattle are moving. You know, one of the things that they're pretty social, right? And so when one goes, everybody follows. It's like a bunch of chickens, right? So when one goes, everybody follows to see what the interest is. If they're not interested in that, kind of a red flag to maybe go walk around that one and kick the tires, if you will, see what's going on. And, you know, like Dr. Larson suggests, I want to get in front of that critter and see what the front end looks like, but also get around on the back end. And, you know, if they've got a bad case of acidosis or coccidiosis, there'll be some remnants hanging around, if you know what I mean. And be observant of, you know, the physical condition of that animal. So other things to look for too, foot rot's not uncommon. You know, sometimes you get calves in off summer range and they were starting foot rot before you got them there, and it just gets worse. So, you know, watch how the animal moves and gets around the pen can tell you a lot about what kind of physical condition they're in. So.
Absolutely. And I think great points there, especially related to how we want to monitor not just the cattle, but their environment, their pen, everything about them. So that leads us to our cattle chat checklist for this week, which are our top tips for evaluating newly weaned calves for disease.
Number five, evaluate for signs of sickness. Look at the cattle closely.
Number four, observe the manure. Make sure it's not too dry, not too wet.
Number three, watch the social behaviors of the calves. Observe their interactions. That can tell you a lot about the health and performance of the calves.
Number two, monitor the feed intake of those calves.
And number one, spend enough time observing those cattle so that you can get an accurate picture of them.
And that's our BCI Cattle Chat checklist for this week. We had one more listener question this week, and I thought this one was really interesting because I know you guys have done a little bit of thought in this area, and we've actually talked to some companies about doing some research, not exactly on this topic, but pretty close. So I'll read you the question, and I want to get your input on thoughts or ideas. And it was about a client that asked a question about using a GPS tracking device. And he was thinking maybe if he put it in his lead cow, he'd be able to not drive over the entire ranch or operation, but he'd know where the cows are, assuming everyone followed the lead cow. You get the right lead cow, and you could. Is there anything out there like that that's available now, or what do you guys think?
That is kind of interesting, and I like the creative idea of using some technology. There's been some research done looking at grazing patterns where they put GPS collars on cows, but you know, kind of practical for a research situation. But you know, the batteries have short half life and things like that. But they're in that situation, they're tracking the cattle constantly, so you'd know exactly where they were and how they distribute throughout a pasture. So that's, you know, so yeah, technology kind of exists, but it's not really addressing the question this producer had. But it makes me encourage that maybe in the future, there, you know, some progress in this area might give us some more tools like that. And I know Dr. Weber has looked at some other kind of applications for GPS stuff in cattle.
Yeah, so one of the interesting things that I actually saw a little bit of when I was in Australia a year or so ago, and certainly there's a number of other companies, including, Vents and others that do virtual fencing for cattle. And so that system lets you define a perimeter to graze cattle, and sort of as a byproduct of that, you get some idea of where the cows are at. So not exactly GPS tracking, but both with a prescribed grazing area, so you can kind of manage where the cows are at. Hopefully they're still in when you get there, right? But you could envision setting it for a pretty large, let's think an expansive Western environment where it might be, you know, stocking densities a cow to 80 acres or something like that, a very big pasture, and at least get some record of, you know, where the cattle were recently, is to give you a place to start. You know, the stepping into a pasture that's two or three or four sections in size and rugged terrain, you go to the water holes and salt licks first, right, and see where cows are at. But if you can get more precise than that, could be really helpful, perhaps. So
what about rugged terrain covered with trees or covered with very tough terrain, and it's very dense?
Yeah, that's one of the, I think, maybe the most useful case scenario for one of these kinds of technologies, but also the most challenging in terms of communication, right? So almost all these devices require some kind of line of sight communication, and the virtual fencing products are designed to be not in continuous contact with the base station. So you don't get continuous data streams from those. They establish their boundary and keep the cattle in there. And then when they get close to signal, then update the map as required. So the terrain's really a challenge for the real-time tracking kind of technologies, because you either got to have super powerful stuff, so as Larson suggests, big batteries and kind of clunky stuff, or you need to be, you know, powerful enough to do satellite-based stuff, and of course then you're really expensive. So,
but we've seen these things change over time, and they continue to evolve.
Yeah,
the internet technologies like a drone I mean, have people used drones before in some of the rugged terrain?
Yeah, maybe? I think that's an area where maybe drone technology may have a quicker adoption than even some of this GPS, although I think either one has the potential for some technological advancement to find some solutions.
I think you're right, Dustin. That's a good idea. Is something like a drone may let you stay at home and depend on the range, or park at the edge of the pasture and at least narrow it down, right? If I can figure out where they are. But they both have the same issues. And if there's some timber or something on the pasture itself, maybe hard to see from the air. But I think that technology will continue to evolve and get better. And we certainly appreciate you asking us questions, even if we don't have all the answers like this one. And this would be a great one. If you've got ideas or you use a unique method, we'd be interested in hearing from you so we can share it with some of our other listeners. So if you've got a plan that you use that may be a little bit different, maybe it involves GPS or a drone, tell us about it so that we can share it. And we're interested in your tips on what makes things work on your operation. As always, if you have questions, comments, anything you'd like us to talk about on a future podcast, please send us an email at bci@ksu.edu.